asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're answering your listener questions.
Buddy, it's Monday, which means we've got listener questions to get to. We got a lot of different financial advice that we're going to touch on today. We're going to discuss the best ways to save in your monthly budget, specifically when it comes to groceries. Another listener, he's wondering if he should be looking at life insurance. He's in his 20s, and we're going to hear from a listener who's asking about early retirement, but specifically as a government, or maybe not government, but as a public employee. In the public sector.
There you go. Yeah. We'll get to all that and more. And that one's interesting because there's always, when you're talking about retiring early, you have to fund early retirement, but you also have to fund normal retirement, which is a long time. So it kind of makes the task just a little more difficult to square. We'll talk about that when we get to that question. But Matt, before we get to listener questions, we had a listener email come in to our inbox a week or two ago, and it was from listener Liz, and she was like,
she signed off as listener Liz.
And she's like, I just have to share this with you guys because I found it crazy. You guys have been talking more and more about how tipping culture has gone insane, gone berserk, and I found the strongest evidence of that yet. She basically said she was making an e-commerce order. I want to say it was for like some organic sort of nut butter or something like that.
Yeah, it's fancy peanut butter or fancy jelly or something.
And so,
finest PB&Js are made at Liz's house.
These are expensive nut butters, but they're something Liz prioritizes. But what she wasn't expecting was a pitch to tip the workers who work there that she's never even seen or met face to face, but when she's placing an online order, which just again baffles me, I'm continue to be shocked at how extensive tipping culture has gone, how much worse it's gotten, how much more fraught even in everywhere you go. Whether it's counter service, it's like, hey, would you want to tip 18, 20, or 30%? You know, like what?
Do you think it's going to continue though? Because I almost feel like we've reached a point. A tipping point, if you will.
I hope we have.
I think maybe we're at the tippy top of the amount of tips that are being asked of us. Because I feel like so much of it, we just saw such a run up during the pandemic with folks getting cash infusions. There was like a desire to make sure everyone stays employed. Like in a sense, it felt like everyone was kind of like looking out for each other. There was like this collective sense of community. But as things like student loans have resumed, and I don't know, incomes haven't kept up with inflation. Like there are all these factors that in my mind feel like
the stimmy money has dwindled.
Yeah. Like in my mind, I can't imagine that the tipping culture, what is being asked of us, that would continue into the future.
Yeah. But no,
I don't know.
I think you're right. I think it had a moment, and that moment is hopefully on the decline because people are going to not just kind of roll their eyes at stuff like this in the future, they're going to start to make decisions about where they shop in the future based on the things that they're being asked and how much money they're kind of being shaken down for. And I'm buying nut butter like online and I'm already paying a premium for the product, I don't want to be asked to tip afterwards. And in fact, that might turn me off from your company altogether.
I would say that if it was like an Uber super local company where maybe I have been to the facility and I know that it's just this one family. Yeah. And normally I go there in person.
It's like Sheila and Rob and they're running the place.
Exactly.
And like, okay.
But like the way that...
But even then...
That email she sent, like it made it seem like a warehouse.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wait, am I tipping warehouse workers? Maybe they should just pay the warehouse workers
exactly.
a living wage.
And then maybe, I don't know, charge more for the product instead of asking for tips. Because that is the problem I think most people have. It's like, just tell me what the price is. I'll decide whether or not I want to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And this sort of like begging for tips thing, especially in places where it used to not be expected, and we were just normalizing tipping in all of these areas. I think it makes people question whether or not they should be tipping in normal circumstances, which is not good, right? Because when you're actually sitting down to eat somewhere, you should be generous tipping in those situations.
100%.
But then these other places, the boy cried wolf on tipping to some worker in a factory when they are getting paid a wage and they should be getting paid. If they need to get paid more, then these companies need to pay them more and charge more for the service. But
I think so.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: you always have a choice. Unless it's a mandatory tip, in which case it's not a tip anymore.
Yeah.
Then it's a fee. But as individuals, we always have that autonomy, right? Like we have the agency to be able to say no. And in those instances,
and you have the ability to say, I'm going to get my nut butter elsewhere because that annoys me.
I'm going to go to Costco and buy like 5 pounds of nut butter.
That's right.
But enough about tipping. Before we get to our questions, let's introduce the beer. You and I are enjoying a strawberry lemonade sunset. This is a beer by Inner Voice Brewing, where we had our listener hang not too long ago here in Atlanta.
We'll give our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode, but let's
it
move
smells
on.
Smells really nice.
Yeah, it does. Let's get to our listener questions, Matt. And by the way, if you're listening and you're like, I've got a money question, I'd love Matt and Joel to tackle it soon on the show. We'd love to do that. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask for the simple instructions for how to get your question to our inbox. And hopefully we can take it on the next Ask HTM episode. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, you don't even need to read the instructions. Record a voice memo, email it our way. It's that simple. But Matt, let's get to our first question of this episode. This one comes from a listener who is curious about efficiency when using her cell phone, not in the United States.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Seda from Sacramento, California. I had a question regarding international roaming. I know you guys just did a podcast on that not too long ago. And I also have Mint and have been struggling with, the international roaming data. Using the Mint international roaming data, it does go really fast. And in my search, I came across an app called Airlo. It's been popping up a lot for me on my YouTube search. And I was wondering if you guys had heard of it. It's spelled Airlo, and it's supposed to work as you're supposed to. It's an eSIM. You purchase eSIMs for the countries that you are going to travel for, and you can purchase different data plans. A lot of YouTubers have been raving about it, and I was wondering if you guys have heard of it and if you recommend it for international roaming plans. I would love to hear your thoughts on this, and I appreciate it. And I love your podcast, by the way. It's great. I listen to all the new episodes that come out. Keep up the good work. And thanks again.
All right. Seda, thank you so much for being a regular listener. We need folks like you to listen to every single episode.
The few. The proud.
But you're specifically asking about international cell phone usage. This is like one of the things that, honestly, it used to be a huge problem, but in recent years, it's become so much more manageable.
Oh, man, Matt, you remember just long-distance calling, traveling. Think about how much easier traveling anywhere has gotten these days. Emily and I, when we were in New York, we were just admiring Google Maps and how getting around on the subway has become a million times easier. And so it's just 10, 15 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, it was so much more difficult to
pull
off.
Even 100. Like, that's the thing. Like, oftentimes there's comparisons about, there's a question. Would you rather be a millionaire 100 years ago or just an average income person today?
Yeah.
And the life that we can live as an average American is so much better than the life of a millionaire from 100 years ago because of some of the simple luxuries that we all have access to.
Even just indoor plumbing.
Even that, well, even I was going to say with like a super cheap cell phone company like Mint Mobile, which Seda, awesome to hear that you are with Mint. They do have an option for using your same plan, but getting international usage out of it is a bit tougher. Like you mentioned, like we discussed actually a few weeks back, the service that Mint provides when it comes to their international plans, it just, I'll be honest, it straight up sucks.
Yeah.
And it's not that the service is bad, it's that it is so expensive.
We attempted to use it for the first time in May in Scotland.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was, oh my gosh.
We love Mint in the contiguous 48 states or whatever, but when trying to use it abroad, it's bad.
It's terrible. So last time we talked about it, we tried to put it in perspective, but this is what they charge. They charge 20 cents per megabyte. But even last time we talked about it, I don't know if we were able to make it clear enough, like what that means, because, and this is, so let's provide an apples to apples comparison. Most abroad cell phone providers that we're going to discuss, you can get gigabytes for something like $1.30 or $2 per gigabyte.
Mm-hmm.
Mint Mobile, they're charging 20 cents per megabyte, which means $2 for 10, $20 for 100. You're looking at $200 for a gigabyte. 200.
Wow. Yeah.
It's over 100 times more expensive than what some of the most competitive providers are going to be overseas.
Yeah, this is a place where Mint falls flat on their face.
They definitely have, yeah kind of screwed the pooch.
Still love Mint, but man, I wish they'd pick up their international options because those are trash. And say that if you travel regularly, we still think Google Fi, we're going to get to part of your other question too in a second, but we still think Google Fi is likely your best bet because specifically, if you have four lines on a Google Fi plan, we're talking about an $80 monthly bill, which is $20 a line. Sadly, the weird thing about Google Fi is if you have two lines, it's still $80 a month. So you really, really, really benefit by adding two more people and splitting the cost of that service with them.
You and three others.
Exactly. Find three people and that's a great deal. That's right in the sweet spot of what we want people paying. And Google's international offering is pretty darn great too, right? You can bump up to their more expensive option, which doubles the price, and then you can use it in 200 plus countries. And so again, if we're talking four lines, $40 a month for unlimited everything international, that's pretty great too.
Sounds pretty awesome.
And then you can always bump down your plan to the cheaper one when you return to the States, which is great. So it just eliminates any sort of hassle factor, which, like I said, it's gotten so much easier, and we'll get into the heart of that in just a second. But still, sticking with one plan that you get domestically and
as
being able to,
as opposed to going with an entirely different product,
being able to ramp it up and down at will, I think is still the easiest easy button.
It's very appealing.
Yeah. So I think Google Fi is definitely one of the best providers out there. And especially if you travel international regularly, they're probably the best cell phone provider to be with.
Yeah. Okay. So something else that is worth mentioning, though, listener Greg, he actually reached out to us after we talked about Mint Mobile last time, when we were talking about international travel. And he mentioned that most modern cell phones actually have two SIM slots. Like there's the traditional SIM card that you can stick in there that when you bought your iPhone or whatever phone years ago, you had to swap it out in order to get your number.
You can have like a bobby pin to
or get it in and paperclip. Out. Exactly. Yeah. But then there's also an eSIM option, and there's not like a second slot. Actually, depending on your phone, you can have multiple eSIM providers for your one phone.
And just like switch back and forth at will.
Exactly. But this makes international travel a lot easier because you can essentially have two services at the same time. And then you just choose which one you want to use.
You're toggling in settings.
Yeah. So literally, at least on the iPhone, you just change what the default provider is. But they make it even easier though too, because you can, what's so great about it is you can choose, let's say you're going to make a call, you can in the moment choose to go with the other cellular provider. So depending on, I think a lot of folks do this with like business lines, right? And so if you have an actual separate number, but you want to be able to use it on the same device, it's a way of doing that without using something like Google Voice with call forwarding and or all that. It's literally using actual service with your actual phone. But what's great about that is like you don't have to buy a physical SIM once, say you go to Europe or wherever it is that you want to travel, you can still do that if you want, but the ability to install a new eSIM from basically any carrier out there in the world is amazing. The ability to do that remotely, to not have to go somewhere and buy a card, is incredibly convenient.
Yeah, you just have to go to like a gas station or a drugstore or some sort of internet cafe in order to get the actual physical SIM card. And so, you know, from the airport, you had to get to that location, buy the SIM card you wanted, get it in your phone, take the other one out. Now, with
or
the
go ahead and do it
thing,
at the airport where you're paying more.
Paying more there. Yes, exactly.
It's a premium that they're charging.
Yeah, and so it's just so much easier now to do the eSIM. You can set it up ahead of time, which is great, so that when you get there, you hop on airport Wi-Fi, you make the switch, and boom, you're there. You're on your other plan.
Yeah, I love it.
And Arelo, which you mentioned, is one of those eSIM providers, right, that you could opt to use. And so when you use an eSIM provider, you're basically buying the data plan ahead of time.
Yep.
While you're planning your trip. And then you install the eSIM via those few clicks that we talked about. There's a QR code oftentimes that can help you activate it. You're able to connect and use your phone like normal then. And the prices are incredibly reasonable for a lot of these eSIM providers, unlike, like you said, Matt, what you'd pay with somebody like Mint. And so they're also much, much cheaper than what Verizon or AT&T will charge you.
Sure.
Oftentimes they'll charge you for a month or for a certain amount for days of usage or per gig. And that can rack up and get really expensive really quickly too. And considering how easy it is to do this eSIM thing, to find a good eSIM provider that has reasonable rates to make the purchase and then make the switch once you're over in the country, it's just, it's so simple, and it's so much less expensive to go that route, either that or the Google Fi route, than it is to basically buy service ahead of time from your U.S. provider.
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, Arelo specifically, it seems solid. There were some bad reviews from frustrated customers on what one website that we checked out. But Nomad, that's actually another one that we heard good things about. Bottom line, the service isn't going to be all that different. So looking at the price per gig is going to be the main consideration. And oftentimes, like on the lower end, like you are looking at something closer to like $1.30 a gig. On the high end, something like $2. And there's some different sites online, some different aggregators. There's a site actually that, like I mentioned, listener Greg, eSIMDB. So eSIM database, I think it's .org, but we'll make sure to link to that in the show notes. But it allows you to compare these prepaid plans from anywhere in the world. And what's great about it as well is that you can focus specifically on the country where you know you are going to be traveling, right? So it's not just, let's say, a European eSIM provider. It's specific to the country. And so they might be able to provide you with the absolute best rates because, hey, all you truly need is a card that works in France, not one that works for the entire EU.
Sure. Yeah. And by the way, it's esimdb.com.
.com's not org?
Okay. Not org.
Nice.
But it's one of those great aggregator sites, which is like, you plug in where you're trying to go, and then it says, okay, boom, here's a list of eSIM providers and what they charge. And so check out a few of the lowest cost providers that pop up when you're scanning that site, and then maybe dig in just a little bit into those companies, read the reviews. Oh, yeah, this one checks out. This one does good, and it's one of the cheapest prices available as well. So I think that can be a great resource. Big thanks to listener Greg for mentioning it to us. I didn't know about eSIMDB.
Yeah,
but I'm glad
it's a good site.
Glad to know it exists.
I feel like I'm an international travel noob to a certain extent.
Yeah,
right? Like I don't know. You got four kids. It's been like 10 years, over 10 years since I traveled abroad, and so. But like, just
until this year.
Yeah, until earlier this year, exactly. But digging into it even more, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is way easier than it used to be. There is absolutely no reason, and we didn't pay $200 per gig when we went to Scotland, but we also didn't have data. And so we were just limited to using our phones wherever we had Wi-Fi,
which
was fine.
I paid for $10 worth of data, but I didn't realize how extremely limited that data was going to be.
And I so got you like three pictures.
Yeah. So it ran out in like no time flat, and I was like, oh, this sucks. And so when you put it into context like that, you're like, wait a second.
Wait
a minute. It's outrageously expensive.
Yes.
And there was a better way. And you and I, we should have been smarter, and we should have known that ahead of time. Yeah. But now we do, and now Seda knows.
Hey,
so.
Yeah, and we were just talking about this morning. As the kids are getting older, Kate and I, we are going to be traveling more and finding ways to cut those costs. That's definitely something that we're going to be doing. I will say there's something nice about having to rely on your
old school maps.
Old school maps, and just kind of walking around, like asking people
gas station directions,
like where you should go, as opposed to checking the reviews and digitally reserving stuff. There's certainly, we're praising the advances in technology and what that allows us, but there's something that you kind of miss out on from having more of those in-person interactions.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But we've got more to get to today. We're going to talk about pensions. We're going to talk about paying to clean your house. We'll get to all of that and more right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com. All right, we're back. We got more money questions to get to on this episode. In just a second, we've got a listener who wants to know whether or not he should be buying what his financial advisor friend is selling. But before we get to that, we've got a listener who's a teacher, and it sounds like she's in that FIRE movement, Matt.
Hi, Joel and Matt. My name is Erin, and I'm from right outside of Baltimore. I love your show so much. Thanks for everything you do, and hope to hear an answer to my question if you get a chance. I am 17 years into the 30 years needed in the state of Maryland for a full pension for teachers. I plan on retiring right at 53 after I have my 30 years in and getting that pension. I might work part-time and I might not, and the pension will cover a significant amount of my retirement, but obviously I can't get into my accounts until 59 and a half. I currently have $135,000 in a Roth IRA and only about $16,000 in my 403B. My plan for between 53 and 59 and a half is to start contributing to a 457 so that money is available once I retire, and also thinking about maybe cutting into the principal for my Roth IRA, which I know is not always the best choice. I kind of just want to see if you guys think I'm on the right track or if there's something else I should be doing.
All right. Erin has a plan. I love it. She's got it all laid out.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, when we first listened to her question, I thought she was going to say, I'm 17 years old. And I was just like, oh, man, this does not sound like a, I don't know. I guess a 17-year-old could sound like Erin.
But probably couldn't have had that long of a teaching tenure.
No, definitely not there.
Teach him from the age of two.
Well, speaking of which, I'm glad to hear, Erin, that you are a teacher, right? Because we have seen a lot of folks leaving that profession. And it's understandable, given what it is that we've asked of teachers and how their pay hasn't necessarily kept up with what it is that they could get where they to work for a private company in a lot of cases, but it's just one of the most important jobs in existence, teaching the next generation. So thank you so much for the almost 2 decades that you've put in so far.
Definitely a sacrifice, right? Yeah. We don't give teachers enough respect in our society.
Or enough pay.
Yeah, and I think maybe we used to, but I feel like that's dropped off significantly, especially given what teachers went through with COVID. I feel like they deserve even more respect because their job got doubly, if not more so, hard. So Aaron, we think you're awesome. So thank you for your service in that profession. And retiring at 53, that's pretty sweet. That's one of those things, Matt, kind of like we talked about with Lacey Langford, talking about military, like that ability to retire early is there for teachers who, I mean, granted, if you start right out of college and you work for straight 30 years, yeah, you're talking about being able to retire in your early 50s, which is killer. Mm-hmm. And so, and having the option to work or not at such a young age, that's clutch, right? A lot of people would love to have that ability, but they haven't necessarily dedicated themselves to this effort as solidly as Aaron has. And Aaron, you're funding other retirement accounts. You're not just banking on the pension covering all of your living expenses in the future, which is incredibly wise. We want all teachers to be proactive because, you know, while having that pension, that's obviously an incredible perk. And it's a perk that a whole lot of people don't have access to. Not many people have pensions anymore, but it's unlikely to cover, like you said, all of your expenses.
That's right.
So funneling your dollars into other workplace and individual retirement accounts like you're doing, that's essential. And that is what's going to help you in particular kind of cover that specific period of time, those six and a half years of, hey, I'm done teaching school, but I'm not really full retirement age yet.
Exactly. And it does sound like she's done a pretty good job at doing just that. And specifically, I love, Aaron, that you've prioritized the Roth IRA so much. It's one of our favorite retirement accounts. It's definitely one that you should keep putting money into, largely because of the tax advantaged status, but then also because of the flexibility that it offers that you highlighted, you know, trying to figure out where to draw from in order to fund those handful of years. If you do decide that you don't want to work at all, like that can be a tough needle to thread, but having some of that flexibility, like you said, having the ability to draw down on principal or on the contributions that you've made to your IRA, that's clutch.
Specifically, that's one of the coolest parts of a Roth IRA.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we've touched on that.
If we haven't touched on
any
that.
Any money that you contribute to your Roth IRA, there is zero penalty for whatever reason you take that money out. Like sometimes folks are like,
that's because it's a post-tax account, right? And you've already paid tax on those dollars. And so when you're socking money away into that, yes, you can leave that money there for a long, long time. But if you want to, even before you reach retirement age, you can pull out the contributions, not the money that's been earned inside of that account, but the contributions are tax and penalty free.
Exactly. And not for qualified expenses. Sometimes folks get confused with the first time home buyer or education expense. No, like literally for anything, if it's a contribution, you can take that money out.
You can pull it out because you want to get your hair done, which is a bad idea, but like you can.
if you wanted to though. But I mean, that being said, in an ideal world, you wouldn't tap those Roth funds until you are actually in retirement as you let those dollars continue to grow. But if you continue to be diligent with your contributions and you continue to fund your Roth IRA, I think it's a more than reasonable place to withdraw funds from if you are interested in retiring sooner than your peers.
Yeah, if your peers
are teachers, I guess they might.
Yeah, maybe.
But just what the IRS typically allows at 59 and a half.
Maybe not, because they might wake up to the realization of like, oh, pension, I thought I was going to retire too, but I haven't.
This isn't enough.
But I haven't saved enough money to ensure that I can. Mm-hmm. Whereas Aaron is, she's making sure that that's going to be the case. And so, yeah, I think it makes sense to be able to pull some of those contributions to cover that handful of years so that she can quit her job when she wants to. And by the way, the annual contribution limit for Roth goes up to $7,000 next year. Right now it's $6,500, but next year it's going to be $7,000. So let's just say, Matt, that she's got 16 years left to fully fund that Roth before she retires. That's $112,000 in contributions that she'll be able to make, and she can withdraw those between the ages of 53 and 59 and a half, between the time where she's quitting work and between the time that she's able to, you know, fully start tapping the funds. And that's in addition to the other contributions you've already made, which I'm not sure what specific amount of how much you have in your Roth is contributions. Let's just say
she's already got money stockpiled in there.
$40,000. That's about $150,000, let's say, in contributions. Overall, that's a decent chunk of change. That's a lot of money. You still have lots of money left over in the Roth in addition to that, hopefully as well, right? The gains that you aren't allowed to tap until you do hit that 59 and a half mark. So yeah, you would still have hopefully, lots of money in your Roth, but you're taking out some of the money that you have pigeonholed essentially for that purpose. And I think that's a reasonable plan. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I agree, man. Yeah. It's just, I will say it's important to note that while it's harder to access funds for those years and the Roth contributions are a great way of going about it, you're probably planning for a much longer retirement beyond 59 and a half, right? Like we're talking about funding cost of living for like another 35, 40 years. And so take that into account, because that could mean possibly funneling even more money into your 457B for the time being, so that, you know, you're building up more of a retirement nest egg. Or it could actually mean working a little more, maybe working part-time during those 6.5 years between teacher retirement and real, or I don't want to say real retirement, like IRS retirement age, to ensure that you're tapping fewer of those Roth contribution dollars.
Not necessarily taking it from like the scale dialed all the way up to literally taking it down to zero, like 40 hours a week or whatever, plus to 0 hours a week, saying, maybe I'll work 10, 12, 15 hours a week in order to not have to pull those Roth.
Quite as much.
Yeah, not have to pull as much money out.
Well, because then, A, you allow that money to continue to grow. But then obviously, if you're working part-time or if you've got another job, something that you're passionate about, it allows you to, obviously, it's money that you're able to live off of, right? Like, this is money that you're using to pay the bills. But the double benefit of that is by not having to tap your retirement dollars. If the market happens to be down, well, you're not, it's sequence of returns risk, right? If the market is down and you're like, oh, I don't have any other way to supplement my pension that I'm now receiving, I have to draw down. Compare that to, let's say, the market's at all-time highs and you start withdrawing. That nest egg at all-time highs is going to last a lot longer than if the market's in the red.
Yeah.
And so that's another benefit of having the options and the flexibility. But then also, so we kind of presented two options, right? Like the ability to either start investing and saving more now or just working perhaps a little bit longer. I know if it was me, I wouldn't want to cut back to the bone right now because there are other goals that I have in my life in the here and now, right? Like having kids makes it easy because you're like, all right, I know I've got 18 years or less if your kid's older before they're gone from the house. And so that's a very limited window of time, right? But even if you don't have kids, I'm sure you might have some other, like, let's just say travel goals that you might have. You might want to go travel with your friends and you might be thinking, okay, am I going to have the energy? Do I want to travel like that when I'm 53, 54, 55? If I'm in my 60s, is that something that I want to even do at that point in time?
Yeah. And I think it's important to kind of, I love that Erin has planned ahead and she's got this idea of what she wants her life to look like, but also hold those plans loosely, at least to a certain extent,
sure.
Right? And so, I would say save in a way and invest in a way that that you can pull these plans off, that maybe you won't have to work at all between those ages of 53 and 59. I think it's a great goal to have, but also realize that as you get closer to that, you might say, you know what? I am tired of teaching. I've been teaching for 30 years, but I still want to be of use. And I would still, actually, I've got this other opportunity over here.
Yeah.
Like my father-in-law, he's still teaching. I think he's almost 40 years into teaching, which is incredible. And he spends even his summers like working for the College Board. And so maybe when he retires, quote unquote, he'll still work for the College Board part-time or something like that. There's all sorts of options.
He's already retired from the public
school. That's right. That's right.
From public to private. There are just so many avenues and paths that you can take.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen this with my folks, my dad, and then also my in-laws. They're both like 20 years into retirement and they worked during that period of time. And it wasn't for the pay. It was partly because they had a desire to go to work for some of these organizations that could not pay quite as much. But
That's
it was
right.
work that they enjoyed, that they found meaningful. And there's a lot of inherent value in what it is that you're able to provide an employer or other people.
So what you're pursuing is optionality.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what Erin's going to have by putting essentially as many dollars as you can in that Roth IRA, knowing that that gives her the most optionality because of the way those contributions can be treated. So, Erin, you're taking the right approach and just kind of mentally, I would say, hold it loosely too as to exactly what your life's going to look like in those years. That's a decade and a half plus down the road, but you're on the right path here and we encourage you to kind of keep making these right decisions and keep going in this direction. And then we're excited to, you know, see what that actually looks like for you in reality.
Yeah. Too. I love that she's got a plan and she is guiding and steering her own ship, right? As opposed to seeing just where the wind ends up taking her.
And like we said, a lot of her fellow teachers might think, oh, pension, this is great. I'll retire after 30 years. And they might realize that they have to keep teaching because they don't
financially
prepare
in
the other ways that they needed to also. So,
that's right.
This is great.
Let's hear from our next listener. And he's considering taking some financial advice from a friend. Or is he a friend?
Hey, Matt and Joel. My name is Nathan, and I live in Huntington Beach, California. And I have a buddy who recently became a financial advisor, and he's trying to sell me on this permanent life insurance. And he's really trying to make it sound like it's the best thing since an HSA and craft beer. He says it comes with cool stuff like tax-deferred high-yield savings, and I'm able to take out low-rate personal loans if I take out a loan against my permanent life insurance. I just don't know too much about it. I wanted to see if you guys could put your input. I'm only 24 years old, and I have no dependents. Also, if you're ever in Orange County, there's some great breweries you guys should check out. Thanks, you guys. Love the show.
Oh, man. Nathan, your buddy, he might be cool, but he's way off on this. And largely because there's nothing better than HSAs and craft beer that's come along that I know of. But those are two of my all-time favorite things.
Yep. Can't argue with that.
Yeah. And we're so glad that you reached out, because so many folks in the same situation, they would kind of trust their friend on this one. They would buy the policy. They would tell themselves, well, they are a financial advisor, right? So this friend must know a whole lot more than me. And because of that trust, they'll end up pulling the trigger. And this isn't the same thing as affinity fraud, but what there's this concept of, or this reality of affinity fraud that happens where it's like, oh, you know this person. They go to your church or synagogue, or they, you know, you run in the same circles, the same community. This is how Bernie Madoff made so much money. People are like, I know Bernie. He's what a great guy, and he's in this civic organization and that one. And so they gave him money to invest, and it was this kind of belief that because they knew him, he wasn't going to do anything treacherous, and yet he ended up doing more treacherous than almost anyone in human history.
Well, I will say, so it's not that this is, so the affinity part is true.
But like, not the fraud.
But not the fraud part.
Exactly, exactly.
Because it's not like...
That's where I was going. It's like, okay, yes. Okay. So I'm saying it's kind of like that, because there's this belief that...
The affinity part's there.
Your friend is not trying to fraud you. Yeah, he's not trying
it's
to...
It's not a total scam.
Yes, he's not trying to scam you. But basically, there are a slew of reasons why these policies aren't as great as he's making them out to be. Yeah. And just because he's your friend doesn't mean you should listen to him and buy in hook, line, and sinker. This is almost 100% a really bad idea for you, specifically at this stage of life, Nathan.
Yeah, yeah. There is actual insurance that's being provided. It's an investment financial product, but it's just not the most efficient, high-performing way of achieving that. Like, it makes me think about, like, a timeshare. Do you actually get to go to the beach when you buy a timeshare? Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a place to sleep? Are you on vacation? Oh, yeah. Like, but... is it easier to hop onto Airbnb and find a deal, or go to Vrbo? Oh my gosh, yes, that's a much, much better way of going about it. And that's kind of...
Are you not signing your life away in a 20-year contract?
Yes. It's very similar in that way. And some of the different perks that are being provided by a permanent life insurance policy, they certainly sound nice, but I'm guessing he probably didn't tell you how much the policy actually costs.
It's like if I was going to the Chevy dealership and they're telling me how great this new Corvette is, and I'm like, oh yeah, horsepower. Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, I can see it.
Zero to 60 in how long? And they're going to tell me all those great things, and then finally they're going to tell me the price tag, and I'm be like, yeah, I'm just going to walk away, you know?
Exactly. They are incredibly expensive, these policies. They can cost you something like 20 times in premiums compared to what a term policy with the exact same coverage, what that would run you. So instead of just like a couple $100 in premiums every single year for insurance, you're talking about dishing out thousands of dollars for that policy instead. So you'd be far better off not getting this policy and instead shoving that money into tax-advantaged accounts instead, just like we talked about with the Roth IRA on our last question.
Yeah, if you're talking about maxing out your Roth IRA versus not being able to max it out and getting this permanent life insurance policy, there's a clear winner. Like, it's not even close, and it's maxing out the Roth. And so we'd much rather see you putting more money into that retirement account, into your workplace retirement account, make sure you're getting the full match or even more, rather than putting those crucial dollars into a really, really expensive life insurance policy. And it's truly, when it comes down to it, it's one that you don't even need. And what I mean by that, right, is what makes this pitch even more difficult to stomach. And again, it's not fraud. It's just selling the wrong product to the wrong person. It's that you're incredibly young. You don't have any dependents. You likely don't even need a super cheap term life policy yet, right? Like,
no need to recommend that either, because there's nobody that is who is counting on your income were you to die.
Right, when your status changes, maybe the older you get, you get married, you have kids, something like that, eventually you might have the need for something like a term life policy. Will you ever have the need for a permanent life policy? Unlikely, possibly, but it definitely is the case that you don't need one now. And so I guess what we would say is, even the $200 that you might spend on a term life policy, even that would be kind of wasted, essentially, until the need arises.
Totally. Yeah. Could not agree more. And so the question is, why is your friend selling you on this policy so hard? And you even said that word, right? So I think deep down you kind of know. He's like, oh, he's trying to sell me this policy. We don't want to throw shade, but it's probably because he stands to make a pretty sweet commission by selling you this policy. And maybe he's somewhat tricked his own mind into believing that everyone and their mom out there needs one of these life insurance policies, even if the reality is that these aren't all that great for the majority of folks. Like, it makes me the Upton Sinclair quote that comes to mind, you know, as far as, was it?
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that might be the boat that he's in.
So it's going to be hard to convince him because he's convinced himself.
And he may not even fully know, because to be... Did he say financial advisor or a financial...
He said financial advisor, but it could... Like, yeah, maybe he's just an insurance salesman.
Yes,
I don't know.
I mean, it's not like he's a surgeon or a doctor where he's taken some oath. He's not necessarily a fiduciary. And so he might be thinking, oh, this is something that people out there buy. And it definitely is, but it just may not be what's best for you.
Yeah, exactly. So for now, as a 24-year-old with no dependents, we would say focus on the basics. Get the match in the workplace retirement account. Max out your Roth IRA if you can. If you have access to an HSA, which you alluded to in your question, try to get some money into that account too. Yeah. Invest some of those dollars for your future, right? Learn more about the HSA and maximize your ability to crush it with that account. Just don't get a ridiculously expensive insurance policy that you don't need just for the secondary perks that it offers. And you can always get a much cheaper term life policy in the future when, again, things in your life change. But and you don't have to be rude or mean to your friend, too. Again, I said that about Affinity Fraud and Bernie Madoff. I really was not trying to loop your friend in and say that he's on a similar plane. He's not. I don't believe that in any way, form, or fashion. But the truth is, the closer we are to people, the more likely we are to believe them. Matt, if you told me that I should take a new way home because it's a lot faster, I would believe you. I wouldn't even look it up on Google Maps just because I trust you, right?
Yeah.
And that is a natural response. And so, but something like this, when it's this expensive, we're talking about this much money, and you know, your friend has a dog in the fight because he stands to benefit financially from selling you this product. It's not necessarily that he's trying to screw you over, but maybe he believes that something is great when, in our opinion, it's subpar, especially given the situation that you're in.
Exactly. All right, we've got more to get to. We're actually going to take a couple listener money wins. There are some listeners over in the How to Money Facebook group. They are crushing it when it comes to their money. One in particular has started paying for what she previously considered to be a splurge and completely unnecessary. We'll get to that and more right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, Matt, we're back. And yeah, we got to get to, I think, a few Facebook listener money wins. There have been some great shares in there recently. And by the way, if you're listening and you're not a member of the How to Money Facebook group, you should go over there. You should sign up. You should join, largely because if you've got a question, it's a great place to ask it. If you're just looking for insight and wisdom, it's a great place to turn. And it's literally the only thing I use Facebook for, that and Facebook Marketplace. And other than that, I avoid Facebook altogether. But
except for keeping up with your ex-girlfriends from high school.
Duh. Doesn't everyone do that? No, I don't.
Let's be honest. Joel never didn't have any ex-girlfriends from high school.
Matt, girls wouldn't date me back then.
I had a couple.
I found one that would date me, and I stuck to her. But Pam posted in our Facebook group this week, and she said, "We've been trying to cut our grocery bill, and we have successfully cut out about $400 a month."
Nice.
Which is a lot of money. By doing the following, she said, using the free Walmart pickup, this has helped curb any impulse purchases by not entering the store. Using the app Upside, the local grocery chain, she said, I use, has up to 8% cash back on the app. When I see a higher percentage, that's the day I shop.
Very nice.
Using my Costco membership to buy more items in bulk. She said, I've stopped being stuck in my ways. I started buying off-brand items too. And then pre-making some breakfast food, like that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to figure out even more ways to save, but I feel like this has been a good start. So Matt, there's a few things I think we could talk about on this. One, congrats to Pam to like saving $400 a month. That's insane. Like that is a lot of money to cut.
It's a big chunk.
And especially I think for a lot of people right now, they've seen the reality of inflation at the grocery store, and maybe they bought the narrative that there's nothing they can do about it. And I think Pam is living proof that there are things you can do to push back on the reality of higher prices. I'm not saying that it's not true that prices aren't more expensive at the grocery store. They are. But I think there are also things that we can do to fight back. And
absolutely.
Let's go through a couple of these. One of the things she said was using pickup.
Yeah, what do you think about the specifically with Walmart, is the fact that it's free.
But I think it's free at Kroger as well. I think
there, oh, is it?
I think pickup so far
from a Kroger. And I know at Aldi it costs, there's a very small fee associated with it. It's just a couple bucks.
So I think the coolest thing about pickup, I think pickup is this beautiful happy medium versus going in the store, which takes a lot of time, versus delivery, which costs a lot of extra money, right? So sometimes there's like delivery fee and tip fee, but then on top of that, every item that you buy might cost more money, and usually does cost more money too. Let's say you're buying,
if you're doing Instacart
on a site like Instacart, yeah. And so
it's a huge downside. Well, and then just
the pickup is great because they literally bring it out to your car. But you're also
the online shopping part, though. If like the having to, man, like I've seen folks on their phones, and I'm like, for all the time that you just spent on your phone not talking to the people around you as you've been responding to somebody who's shopping for you because they can't find the item and they're asking for replacements.
Yeah.
You should have just gone and done it yourself.
Yeah.
And saved all the money, and it maybe would have taken just
as
much time.
Well, I'm a weirdo and I like grocery shopping. So I usually do the grocery shopping in our house anyway because I enjoy it. But for most people who don't or feel like they don't have the time, I think ordering online and then picking it up makes a whole lot of sense. And because the other thing that Pam mentioned was those impulse purchases, they get you, right? They get you at the grocery store. And that is one massive benefit of doing the pickup, is you're not tempted to get the stuff on the end cap that costs a lot of money.
I think it comes down to knowing yourself, right? And if you know that you're going to be tempted, then maybe that's a situation you should completely avoid. I personally don't do a whole lot of our grocery shopping, but because of that, I don't think I've developed that muscle. And so anytime I do go to the grocery store, dude, I always come home with stuff and Kate's like, what is this? Because she has it down to a science. And so like the time saving part of it doesn't really apply, because literally she can get in and out of Aldi faster than anyone I know. Like she knows her items. She knows exactly what it is that we need. So there's not a whole lot.
She's also on rollerblades.
That would be awesome if she did do that. But
she's like, dude, she would make a great contestant on Supermarket Sweep.
I wanted to mention, so she was talking about getting more items at Costco in bulk, specifically when they're on sale. That's something that we're considering doing, taking advantage of the ability to do that. Specifically, what I'm talking about here is potentially getting a deep freeze. I want to crunch the numbers a little bit, figure out how much it's actually going to cost me to run, to power a deep freeze in our garage.
Yeah, look at the Energy Star numbers or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And then try to calculate, like, how much do I actually think I can save? Because the problem is if when you buy a whole lot of food, it's going to spoil if you don't eat it, obviously, yeah. right? And is there anybody who has an empty freezer at home? No. Like, everybody's freezer is always so packed out. And the ability to buy more big old hunks of meat or vegetables, just whatever, berries, as they go on sale and keep them in the fridge, man. Like, I want to be able to do that, to be a little more scrappy when those sales come along.
Buy them, stock up in the proper season when things are on sale, and then save them for later, for sure.
Exactly.
One of the other things she mentioned was, she said, I've stopped being stuck in my ways and I started buying off-brand items.
Oh, dude.
Which I love.
I think this is the biggest thing.
There's so much potential for savings there. That you could change where you shop, which is one of the things she said she did. But we always recommend Aldi. We think it's the
best.
If you're going to do one thing, that's probably the biggest thing.
Like, in my mind, it's the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Easiest thing. Because, like, she also mentioned the app, which can be nice.
Yeah.
But that's sort of, in my mind, it's couponing 2.0.
Yeah. It's like a little bit of add-on.
There's more hoops to jump through.
But the biggest thing is where you shop and then discount or store brand items. Last times you can get them 30 to 40% off what the brand name cost is, sometimes even more. And Consumer Reports, by the way, they did a taste test a few years back, and they found most people can't tell the difference between a lot of these store brand and name brand items. And so it's certainly worth another shot. And especially when you're talking about Aldi or Lidl, shopping at one of those stores.
Gosh.
Because
all you have to do is just go to one of those two grocery stores. Go to Aldi. And
well, and they've got the guarantee.
Not everybody has one of those near
them. So if
them.
It sucks, you can take it back. If you're like, wait, these fake Oreos don't taste like Oreos, take them back.
It's the Aldi Doritos that are terrible.
I know.
You know what? Actually,
I got a lot of flack for that.
I think we're going to stop getting the American singles, like the slices of cheese.
Uh-huh.
It's the plastic on when you go to peel the cheese, it breaks. And so we were recently doing burgers, and I was slapping, you know, everybody. I know you don't like cheeseburgers, but all the rest of the world,
white cheddar on
likes a cheeseburger, Joel. And I was cracking those bad boys open, and the plastic kept ripping. It was like a cheap tape.
Oh yeah, gross.
When you're trying to like, you know, like if you got some packing tape and you're trying to get a big piece of tape off and it keeps like shredding.
Yeah,
that's what the plastic was doing, and I was afraid that there's going to be a little piece of plastic on the cheeseburgers. I was a little paranoid. It kind of stressed me out.
Yeah,
I told Kate, I don't think we should be getting this cheese anymore because I don't think it's worth it. Because of this way, I was like, I don't want anybody to be munching on any plastic.
But I think more than anything,
Aldi alone, just go there. And I know we easily saved 30, if not 40% just from going there instead of Kroger.
Well, I feel like Pam's whole post summed up a lot of the advice we would give to someone who's asking, how do you save money at the grocery store?
Yeah.
And pre-making some meals like that too saves money on buying some of those prepackaged foods. And
or even eating out.
Exactly.
There's that temptation.
Like,
you've got it ready to go.
I've got a meal in the freezer.
Kind of feels like fast food.
I can pop it in the oven and we've got dinner tonight. Those are the kind of things to think through if you want to save at the grocery store. And they're just a lot of the low-hanging fruit, a lot of the easy steps that a lot of people are just kind of unwilling to take. So kudos to you, Pam, for actually doing
good
it.
Good work, Pam.
And for saving as much money as you have.
Grocery budgets, I think it's something around 10%. Percent of what it is that we spend every single month. So any ability that we have to adjust something like that, that we have total control over, is a huge win in our book. Another win is from Bonnie, and she said, life win more than a money win, a craft beer equivalent. I have always told myself that when I make X dollars or when I had enough money, whatever that means, I would hire someone to clean my house a couple times a month. However, I could never pull the trigger, even though we are now debt-free except for our 2.25% mortgage.
Wow.
Humble,
jealous.
Humble brag. We are maxing out retirement accounts, etc. Then I had a realization that I hesitate to invite people to my home due to feeling like it is never clean enough. And she wrote, I do realize friends and family likely won't notice or care. So I pulled the trigger on spending the $250 a month for the freedom to have people over at any time and being able to enjoy my time off work more without feeling guilty for procrastinating on cleaning the house.
Mm.
Joel, what are your thoughts on Bonnie's money win?
I like that.
You're going to get all judgy? No,
honestly, the exact opposite. I love that she's spending money in this way. And I love that she's connecting it to a deeper value that she has. That it's not just like, I don't like cleaning, or, oh, I want to be lazy, right? It is truly, you know what I really value is community, having people over my house and being able to do it on a whim whenever I want to. And that's why I want to get this done, which is cool. And obviously she's financially prepared to do it. She can make this decision no matter what the underlying reason is, because she's making the other smart money moves. It makes me think of our conversation with Ben from Chronify about, you know, time and money. And what he talked about was this one night of the week where they get takeout from their favorite Mediterranean place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more than just like, we don't have to cook because we don't like cooking. It was really so much deeper than that. The way he connected the money he spent on that to, you know what? It means no cleanup. It means we can just really enjoy this family dinner and then play games afterwards without having to worry about cleaning up the kitchen.
He talked about it being like clean eating as well. So he's just like it's a healthy meal as opposed to fast food. So in his case, it was going to cost more than getting like a burrito or something burritos can be pretty healthy. Like a cheeseburger, better than getting a cheeseburger and fries. But he was also valuing not just time spent together in community or relationship with his family, but also like his physical health, which is great too.
And I think lots of times we're doing stuff from pure convenience standpoint and we're not really connecting the dollars we're spending to something deeper. And I think even just reframing it and why am I spending money like this again? It can help us feel less guilty about spending money in that direction. And thinking of it, that's why we talk about the craft beer equivalent. When you can think of money you're spending on even just a splurge and saying like, this is something that brings me a lot of joy for this, and this reason. When you can call those things out, it can help connect the money spent to the deeper reason it's a good thing. Makes me even think about our episode with Ken Honda back in the day and how that helped me change how we were spending money in a couple of ways. And it just made me feel less guilty about doing it. Yeah. And I think I've always had this ability to be guilt-ridden when it comes to how I spend money, largely because of the way I just felt like I had to save and invest everything. And I've grown up, I've realized, especially in recent years, that's really silly. And there's a lot of good that can come from spending your money well on things that you care about. And so, but connecting the dots is really important.
Yeah. That being said, and I completely agree with everything that you're saying, I think that sometimes you don't even need to justify your spending if you are reaching your financial goals. And so I think that's a huge part of Bonnie's story, right? The fact that she has achieved her some different financial goals or milestones that she's got going on. And for her, the bigger win here is that she has mentally arrived, right? Yeah. Like she's previously financially arrived. And now for her to mentally arrive at that point, she's kind of doing it through thinking about community. And again, everything that you said and everything that she's saying, I completely agree with. But I think the more libertarian approach. If you are reaching your financial goals, I don't even really care what you spend your money on. Hopefully there's some sort of ideal, something that's driving you, like a way that you're able to justify it. But honestly, I don't even really care, because you have, as long as you aren't making excuses for goals that you aren't achieving. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I almost see it as like a black or white thing. You know, I don't want you to like literally flush money down the toilet unless that somehow gives you some weird pleasure. I don't know.
Is that a kink?
But like, we are all different people and we all have different things that we prioritize and things. Because for somebody else, it's just maybe their thing that they're able to connect it to is just, it truly is convenience. Maybe their big thing is, I just want to not have to think about anything. All right, that sounds like being lazy. Yeah. But if that's what it is for that person, I'm not going to tell anybody that shouldn't be something that they spend money on. So I love the fact that you can connect it to things that truly do bring you like life satisfaction and where you're able to hit some of these other goals in life other than just financial. But I also think if you are reaching your financial milestones, the different goals you have, that you can kind of spend your money however you want.
Yeah.
Or give it away even.
Sure. Which is, I think, another great goal. I think people like Bonnie are probably rare, though. Usually, most people are like, don't have enough money left over to invest because they're spending on so many things to make their lives easier.
Bonnie's on the frugal side.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But I think probably there's a disproportionate amount of folks who listen to our podcast who do fall into that camp, who are
totally
so bent in the frugal direction that they have a hard time loosening the purse strings. And so I think it's a really good thing to go back and look and say, well, how much money do we have saved left over? Can we afford to splurge on this or that, the things that matter to us? Because you can't spend on everything. We know that. If you choose to spend on everything, you won't have any money left over to save and invest and give money to the causes that matter to you. And so you have to be thoughtful about where you're putting those extra dollars. But I think that a lot of our listeners could stand to benefit from kind of what Bonnie's saying and maybe rethink some of those things that they had said were off limits for them financially and maybe start to dedicate more dollars in that direction. And it's going to prove to add a whole lot of happiness to their lives, but they just haven't given themselves permission to spend money in that direction yet.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anchoring it to something that matters more to you than having actual dollars on hand.
Because at the end of the day, what does that extra $200 a month mean for your financial future? Sure, you can run a return simulator on what the money invested in the S&P 500 is going to give you, but how much joy is it going to give you in the here and now? And are you still going to have enough money in the future because you're already investing really well? Then maybe you can part with that $200 and use it to spend on cleaning the house so that you can enjoy your friends and that extra bottle of wine you got to buy too to host them. So
don't forget those ancillary costs, Bonnie. Right. But thank you for sharing that. And again, Joel mentioned the How to Money Facebook group. Head over there if you have not yet checked it out. It's, I'm going to say, the happiest place on the entire internet.
Yeah.
Internets.
And there aren't necessarily as many happy places as you would hope on the internet, but this is one.
Not at all.
Yeah. But let's get back to the beer. This one's called Strawberry Lemonade Sunset. It's by Inner Voice Brewing. What are your thoughts on this beer, man?
So good. I will say that on the nose, I was expecting much more strawberry.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you start drinking it, I feel like there's more of the tart lemon, the sourness kind of coming through. More strawberry on the nose, more lemon on the tongue, in the actual mouth. I could 100% picture this being like a frozen drink.
You
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine these flavors? Like, it just the... with a straw, and you're sitting there beachside.
That's what I was saying. This feels like a beach drink with an umbrella in it.
But, oh my gosh, yeah.
But in beer form, right?
Mm-hmm.
And strawberry lemonade, what a great beverage. But turning it into a beer, I was worried that this was going to be like way too sweet, way too cloying or something like that.
The sour was just right.
No, it was great. This was really well balanced. And lemon can sometimes be a little too harsh, a little too tart for me. But this wasn't. This was perfectly balanced. Like, got both the strawberry and the lemonade in there. And it was laid back version of kind of something that I was thinking was going to be too intense. So mad props to the folks at Inner Voice for making just another great beer.
Yeah. And if you have a 21-year-old and you're worried that they're not going to take up craft beer drinking like you enjoy, try something like this, you know, because maybe they're used to enjoying the strawberry lemonade Minute Maid frozen treat like at Six Flags or whatever amusement park. This is a way to step it up to the next level.
If they're only drinking White Claw, this is a beer to give them so that they can try craft beer, but maybe the nice gateway drug.
You know what? That's going to be it for this episode of How to Money. You can find links, any of the different resources we may have mentioned in our show notes, up on the website at howtomoney.com. And so, buddy, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.